I'm going to share with you from that passage because I think that it is very relevant to the situation that we are in today. Last Thursday, I met with Tyler and we made our plans for Sunday morning. We were going to have our discipleship class at 9:30, and then we were going to have our worship service, and then we were going to have a potluck, and the missions team was going to do their presentation after the worship service, and everything was together. Tyler went home, and then I got a text message asking if it was a good idea to have the potluck. And I had known that there was going to be a time where we were going to have to stop meeting. Like, I'd been watching that coming. But I thought, my first response was, you know, this Sunday we're okay. Next Sunday, definitely not. But I think we can at least do the potluck. And then the conversation went on. We decided it wasn't a good idea to do the potluck. And then by the time that I got home that evening, everything changed. The schools all of around us canceled. The churches started to cancel their services. And then by the time I was walking to the church the next morning, Andy from across the street from St. Stephen's came up. He said, "Eric, are you having worship services today?" And I said, "That is the big question." And as we were talking, someone texts him saying, "We're canceling our services." And from there, realized that we weren't going to be able to be gathering, and everything just shut down. And so we're getting floods of emails from all kinds of places, and everyone is saying, "This is a rapidly changing situation," which was an accurate description of what was happening. Things were changing faster than any situation I can remember in my life. And this is different than any of us have ever experienced. And when things change like that, it is not surprising that we would question what is true, what is real. When things are different and we don't know what to expect coming up, we start to ask questions about reality, and we start to ask questions about God. Does he care about us? Is he in control? And is he even there? When everything around us appears to be completely out of control, it is not surprising that we would question whether God is there, whether he cares, and whether he is in control. And these are the kinds of questions that the disciples asked when they saw Jesus be arrested. This is a man that they had followed for 3 years. This is the one that they had completely oriented their lives around. And even though he had warned them that this was coming, they should have known that this was going to happen because he had told them a number of times. When it happened, their worlds turned upside down, and they started to even question whether he was really the one that he said that he was. And we saw that last week. I shared about how that when Peter saw this, he was so disoriented that he even ends up denying Jesus 3 times. But behind that reality of Peter's disorientation is the revelation that Jesus is completely in control. And the fact that Peter denies Jesus, as upsetting as that is for Peter, what it does is that it proves that Jesus is who he said he was, because Jesus had said Peter was going to deny him 3 times. So by doing that, Peter fulfills Jesus' word. And so we're going to see more fulfillments of Jesus' word today as we look at the second half of John 18. And this is not going to be from the about the disciples, but now it's going to be about Pilate and how Pilate, the governor of Judea, realize or at least has the opportunity to see who Jesus is. So Pilate served as governor of Judea for about a decade, and I don't think he was particularly happy about that. He did not particularly like Jewish people, probably wasn't thrilled that he was placed that far away from Rome, but it was a place for him to exert his power and control, and he cherished the fact that he ruled over these people that he despised, at least that he was in a position of authority over them. And he liked to rule with an iron fist to let them feel the heavy thumb of Rome on them. And so often he would exert his power. And so he this morning wakes up early, finds that the Jews are already, or the Jewish leaders are already stirred up about this man named Jesus, and Jesus is brought to them, and he sees this as another opportunity for him to show the Jewish leaders how much he despises them and to show them how much control he has over them. So they bring him to him, and they want Pilate to make a decision about Jesus, because if Pilate makes the decision and sentence Jesus to death, then Jesus will be crucified. And that's the only way for him to be crucified. So they bring him to Jesus, and Pilate goes outside and he asks the question, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" And they had probably already told him, because they refused to tell him there because they just assumed that he was going to go along with their plan. They say to him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." They're surprised that Pilate isn't just going to rubber stamp their decision to send him to his execution. But Pilate tries everything to get rid of Jesus. He wants the Jews just to go and try him by themselves, and he doesn't want anything. He wants to wash his hands of this situation, but the Jews will not let Jesus go. And so Pilate is now has a problem early in the morning that he's probably not very happy about having, but he ends up taking Jesus into his headquarters, and he starts interviewing Jesus. And his goal in his interview with Jesus is that he will be able to either have clear evidence to sentence him to death, or clear evidence to be able to release him and be done with it. But he wants it to be clear, and he wants it to be easy. So he asked Jesus about the charge that the Jews had brought against him. He says, "Are you the king of the Jews?" But instead of giving him a yes or no answer, Jesus says, "Do you say this of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me?" And so he instead of giving him an answer, he answers with a question. And so now they start going back and forth. And instead of Pilate getting the clarity that he was hoping for, he ends up getting Jesus explaining about his kingdom, that it is a real kingdom in which he is a king, but it's not the kind of kingdom like a Roman kingdom where there's a capital somewhere that you could go and visit and that you can go and see. It's a kingdom that is not of this world. And so Pilate ends up in this back and forth with Jesus, more confused than what he had begun. And so eventually, just exasperated, Pilate says to Jesus in verse 38, "What is truth?" It sounds like a very postmodern question. And in a sense, it is. Pilate's realizing that he does not know exactly what truth is. Truth for him had made sense at the beginning of the day. He knew that Caesar was in Rome, that he was a member of the Roman Empire, and that was what his world made sense to him. But now Jesus comes in, and he starts asking questions, and he looks like a prisoner, but he says he's a king, but he's been turned over by his own people. And Pilate is just totally confused, and Pilate doesn't know what to do. Pilate says, what is truth? And the irony of this entire situation, the way that John is writing it, is that he wants Pilate to know that truth is standing right in front of him. And the truth, same for us today, the truth is Jesus, the one who said in John 14:6, I am the way and the truth and the life. Though it doesn't make sense, though it doesn't appear to be the truth is Jesus, and he's standing right there in front of Pilate. And Jesus is in control of this situation the entire time. The fact that he was arrested, the fact that he was brought before Pilate, the fact that he is about to be crucified is fulfilling the prophecies of Jesus. In verse 32, we read, this was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was going to die. And everything that happens to Jesus is proof that Jesus is who he said he was, the one who always speaks truth. In fact, the one whose voice is so powerful that when the soldiers arrested him that evening, simply by saying, I am, he knocked the Roman soldiers to his feet. So Jesus' word is incredibly powerful, and his kingdom, which is not of this world, is coming, and his words are being fulfilled. Jesus says in verse 37, everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. So when we see these things happen to Jesus, when we know that he is of the truth, we know that they are happening exactly the way that he said they were going to happen. So when Jesus is being mocked, people are yelling slander at him, we see Jesus being in his coronation. When we see them putting a crown of thorns on his head, we see Jesus being crowned with a crown of jewels. When we see Jesus walking to his cross, we see Jesus on his royal procession. When we see Jesus being lifted up to the cross, we see Jesus ascending to his throne. When we see that title over his head, the King of the Jews, we know that it is true. The entire procession, everything that happens to Jesus, is Jesus being led to his throne in heaven, where he is going to reign for eternity, and where he will come from one day, and we will see him again. Through everything that happens to Jesus, Jesus is in control. And even today, in this rapidly changing situation, when we don't know what the future holds, we don't know what is going to happen next, every 12 hours, something different comes out. We do know that Jesus is still the king. We do know that Jesus is still on his throne and that Jesus is in control. We know that whatever happens, he will continue to reign. And so Jesus is king over the coronavirus. Jesus is king over the governments of the nations of the earth. Jesus is king over the economy of the United States and every other, the entire global economy. Jesus is king over your job and over your family and over your own heart. Jesus continues to speak his truth, that he is the way, the truth, and the life into the world. In the movie, The Passion of the Christ, you see a very graphic description of Jesus being beaten and mocked and covered in blood and spilling his blood that pays for our sins. And you see Jesus carrying his cross toward Golgotha. And at one point, Jesus falls over because he's overwhelmed and exhausted, and his strength is fading. And when he falls down, his mother comes to him, and she looks into his face, and his face is covered in blood, and his teeth are covered in blood. And Jesus looks at his mother, and he says, "Behold, I am making all things new." And that's what Jesus is saying even today. Behold, I am making all things new. Even though you cannot see it, even though everything you look at appears to be going in the exact opposite direction, Jesus says to us, "I am making all things new. I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the King of the universe. I am the King of the Jewish people. I am the King of all who will call on my name." This is our King. Thanks be to God.